Hello, it's Golf Today on a Wednesday. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine, Keegan Bradley having to juggle. A lot of players at the Wyndham having to juggle and compartmentalize during this pressure-packed time.
Yeah, most weeks out here in professional golf, it's a pretty simple goal. You just go out there with one intent to win. Now we're moving into a phase in the season where that's not the case. It's almost like the pressure becomes like this kind of Russian doll scenario. You know, you get through one week and suddenly things are a little narrower, a little tighter, and you've got to keep on going because you have guys on the bubble. You have guys trying to make the Ryder Cup team. You have guys just trying to keep a job out there.
A lot of bubbles, a lot of pressure. That's why we love this time of year. It's a huge week on the PGA Tour. The Wyndham Championship in Greensboro, North Carolina marks the last event before the FedEx Cup playoffs start. Top 70 in the FedEx Cup standings will continue playing after Sunday. You can catch live first round coverage this Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Golf Channel. Take a look at the bubble, because every player ranked from 60 to 80 in the standings are in the field this week. Here's a snapshot. Cal Golden Bear, Ben On at 69. Germany's Matty Schmidt, the so-called bubble boy, at 70. Denmark's Nikolaj Højgaard, 71. A couple of Georgia Bulldogs, Keith Mitchell and Chris Kirk. They see Gary Woodland at 75. Again, only the top 70 will make their way to Memphis. So what's at stake? Yep, top 70 in the playoffs. Top 50 after Memphis are fully exempt for the 2026 season and qualify for all of the signature events. What a sweet spot that is. And of course, the top 30 make it to the lucrative Tour Championship in Atlanta. Top 100 eligible for the remaining players is determined through the FedEx Cup fall.
And of course, the playoffs isn't the only thing we're looking forward to. We're closing in on the 2025 Ryder Cup at Bethpage Black. That's in late September. The United States, led by Captain Keegan Bradley, will be trying to take back the cup won by Luke Donald's Europeans in Rome a couple of years ago. And here's the current European team standings. Rory McIlroy is the only one guaranteed to be on the team at this point, but you see a lot of familiar names right there, a lot of folks who featured in that winning team in Rome. And here is the current United States team standings. No surprise who's at the top of that list. Top six will qualify, and that will be determined after the playoffs here, or after the BMW Championship. Well, this week at the Wyndham Championship, there are several players who are trying to earn a spot on their respective teams. And with more on that, we say hello to Todd Lewis.
Gentlemen, hello and welcome to the Wyndham Championship. And as you mentioned, yes, the FedEx Cup playoffs are pretty much on the frontal lobe of most of the players in the field. But there is Ryder Cup implications for some of the players in the field. On the European side, the Højgaard twins are in the field along with Robert McIntyre. But the European Ryder Cup captain, Luke Donald, is not in the field. Conversely, the U.S. Ryder Cup captain, Keegan Bradley, is playing here at the Wyndham Championship, and there are several players that are close to automatically qualifying for that team that are in the field. And then there are other players who have plenty of Ryder Cup experience who are looking to kick off here at the Wyndham Championship a run at being on Keegan's team.
I would say I'm definitely outside of consideration right now. There's still time to try and plead my case, but you know, going back to executing, I need to go play some good golf, and I need a really good stretch these next few weeks. The team will be fine with or without me, but I haven't quite done much of anything to say I should be there. But it would be fun to go on a little run and see if that maybe sparks anyone's interest, but if we can't, hey, it's part of it. You don't make all of them, but they're fun to be a part of, and we'll see if we can get ourselves a shot at it.
If the Ryder Cup was today, I'd tell Keegan, make sure you don't pick me, you know. But you know, it's not done. You know, the decision's not made today. Why not, you know, make a run in the playoffs? And that's the goal, you know, the ultimate goal. But you know, at the moment, one foot in front of the other, as you know, as the cliche goes, one shot at a time, and that's all I can do over the next few weeks is try to play as good a golf as I can, and we'll see where the chips fall.
I haven't played as well as I would have liked the last 2-3 months, so, you know, I've had some, like, injuries, little stuff, and just, you know, I haven't been, you know, myself, I feel like. I haven't hit the ball as well as I would like, so I kind of wasted my opportunities with some majors, and kind of behind the eight ball a little bit with that. So, you know, I've got four more events to earn my spot. I would say, you know, if I'm looking at it today, I don't think I've done enough. So, you know, this is four more opportunities to go show what I got.
I think every, at least American golfer, dreams of being on the Ryder Cup team and representing the United States. You know, even as a kid, just growing up watching all those team events. I mean, the President's Cup and the Ryder Cup, I mean, they're very meaningful. It's an honor to be on those teams. It means you're one of the best players really in the whole world. And so, yeah, I think, you know, I just got to continue to do the right things. I can't get too caught up in what exactly all of it means, but I am paired with Keegan. We just got our tee times paired with Keegan and Andrew Novak this week. So hopefully we'll get a lot of good talks in, and hopefully all of us will play pretty well. I think all of us are kind of on that bubble of trying to at least get in that top six and lock up our spot. So it's going to be really competitive this week. I think that's just the best way to do it, continue to grind against each other, play really well, and see who can get those automatic bids.
And to extenuate what Ben is talking about there, Ben Griffin and Andrew Novak will be playing alongside Keegan Bradley both Thursday and Friday here at the Wyndham Championship. And I can tell you, if they play well in front of the U.S. Ryder Cup captain, that's going to show Keegan Bradley a lot that they can handle the pressure of Bethpage. Now, talking to Keegan and some of his vice captains over the last few weeks, there are some considerations that they are looking for in regards to players. Number one, form. You got to have proper form heading into the Ryder Cup. Secondly, how does their game, a player's game, suit up at Bethpage Black? And more importantly, I think the biggest thing is, how does a player fit in regards to the team culture? That is very important in selecting who is going to be on that team. And one person that might be on that team as a player is Keegan Bradley himself, who is coming off a phenomenal year. It's hard to argue that he is not one of the top 12 American players on the planet right now. I can tell you that there have been discussions in regards to Keegan Bradley with his vice captains being on the team. And if he is a playing captain, what they are trying to figure out to do, there is no firm plan in place because he hasn't put himself on the team yet or qualified for the team yet. As Eamon mentioned, the automatic qualifiers will be after the BMW Championship, and then six captain's picks by Keegan Bradley. That'll come the Wednesday after the Tour Championship. And guys, if he doesn't automatically qualify, it'll be interesting to see if Keegan Bradley picks himself as a playing captain on that Wednesday.
It definitely will. Todd Lewis, with all the storylines in Greensboro, these bubbles, the pressure, Keegan, will he or won't he? Is it decided already? Do you think he's going to play?
I do think he's going to play, and I think you can make a valid case that he's on that team. You know, they have an apparatus around them in terms of John Wood as a team manager, and I would expect if he is going to be on that team that he will only play in the afternoon sessions. You can make all of the decisions through the course of the day. You don't want to be out there in the morning as captain when there are decisions to be made for the afternoon
sessions. See, I don't think he should make any decisions. No decisions. You play. Don't captain and then kind of, I'm going to half play.
I don't see him relinquishing the captaincy.
It does
raise this interesting question about, are we going to get the change that we were promised? Because Keegan Bradley was the change agent. It was the end of the old guard. It was the buddy system was put to rest. And we just heard Todd Lewis say there that part of the considerations, as they are every year, would be the culture of the team and who fits well with that. Every captain comes out and tells you they want the 12 best players. It's a lie. It's never been true. They want the 12 best players that everyone's willing to tolerate in the team room. And that's a lesson the Americans have learned in a pretty hard way over the last sort of 10, 15 years. It's why they had a task force. It's why the players took control of the system. And we are going to see some changes this year, more so, I think, on the American side. If you look at the European guys who were in Rome playing for Luke Donald 2 years ago, almost every one of them is in the mix again. You talk about Rory and Rahm and Hovland and Oberg and
Justin Rose,
Tommy Fleetwood. The only one who's sort of borderline, really, at the moment is Nikolai Højgaard, and his identical twin brother is sort of in the mix as well. But you look on the American side, and the only guys who are pretty much locks who were there last time around are Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas. I would argue everyone else in poor form. Just look at the list of names who were there 2 years ago. Cantley, Homa, Spieth, Koepka, Burns, Fowler, Harmon, Clark. It's a very spotty record
of
form for those guys in there. And there are guys who are not part of the buddy system you can make a case for, like a Ben Griffin, a Maverick McNealy, Chris Goddard.
Andrew Novak.
There are a lot of questions to be answered on the U.S. side. Whether or not Keegan's playing might not actually be the most revealing one of all.
Well, it's funny that Keegan was the guy who was on the outside in 2023. He was not in the buddy system. He was left out of the dance. He had that tough phone call from Zach Johnson that he was not playing. It was really the hub and the center and the heart of that whole Netflix series. And now he holds the keys to decide who will be in, who will be out. Sam Burns, well down the list, 16th. Is he going to be? I mean, he's Scottie Scheffler's best friend. They played well together in the President's Cup. Should they be together? Is that a slam dunk? Maverick McNeely's never been on a team. Yeah. He's higher on the list. Ben Griffin's never been on a team. Do you take him or do you go with a Jordan Spieth? Do you reach way down? Tony Finau very honestly saying, right now you can't take me, even though he has Ryder Cup experience. But you're right. It's not going to be the top 12. We hardly ever see it just go 7, 8, 9, 10, yeah. 11, 12. And I don't think we will either this year.
No, and it does really go to the heart of whether or not America is still crowdsourcing the captaincy here. Because what we've seen in the past is we saw Zach Johnson was explicitly clear about it. He let the guys who were automatic qualifiers have a huge say in yeah. who else made the team. And if Scottie Scheffler says, OK, well, I want Sam Burns, who's not playing particularly well, because I'm comfortable with him, or Patrick Cantlay, not an automatic qualifier. If yeah. Xander says, well, we're a good team, I want that there, is Keegan Bradley going to defer to that? And you can make an argument for Cantlay. I mean, look at what he did on that Saturday night match against Rory McIlroy in Rome. You would make an argument, a compelling argument, that he's a guy that you would want there. But why is that decision going to be made? And I think that's where the captain's picks get quite interesting. Is it going to end up looking like the guys who are on the team already are right. heavily influencing the guys who come after them? Because that's what Zach Johnson allowed to happen. And whether or not Keegan Bradley is going to allow this kind of rolling over of a kind of a soft buddy system remains to be seen.
And that's why I feel like there needs to be a decision pretty soon whether Keegan's going to do this or not. And even if publicly we don't know if he's going to play or not, I would hope that behind the scenes, even despite what Todd told us, that they have decided Keegan's going to play.
But you don't think he can do both? You don't think he can play and make decisions?
I don't think he can.
He's got a pretty good team of guys around him.
But, well, then let them do it. I don't think he can do either to the utmost of his ability. I think he'll be a lesser player if he's got to do captain duties. I think he'll be a lesser captain if he has to worry about trying to take down Robert McIntyre in singles. I just think that it should be streamlined. Guys, I'm going to play. I think he'd be in a different headspace. Don't you at home? He'd be in a different headspace as a player than he would be as a captain. He'd be in a different mindset as a player as opposed to being a captain. A captain has to be clinical, objective. Let the player have the passion. The captain can't let the passion overwhelm common sense.
I disagree with that. I think it's possible that he could actually do both. Now, whether or not he performs isn't entirely determined by whether or not his attention is split on a given week. He may take both jobs and just perform poorly as a player, or the decision-making may fall on the wrong side of the chips for him as the captain. I don't think it's inherently a wrong decision for him to make. And if he limits himself to playing in afternoon sessions on Friday, Saturday, well, then I think he's got a certain clarity there. If he's in the morning, he's going to be starting to fret about how the other matches are going, how that impacts the decisions to be made for an afternoon session. Singles, it's all out there. So I think there's a narrow window where actually playing could directly interfere with the immediacy of the decisions that a captain has to make. I don't think it's an entirely wrong thing. And as a European, I kind of encourage this, because the more your captain's distracted, the better.
Well, win or lose, a play or captain, he's going to need like an hour or maybe a month-long nap after this Ryder Cup is over on Long Island.
Yeah, you ain't getting any sleep at Bethpage, that's for sure. Well, all right, the last major of the year is taking place this week. That's the AIG Women's Open. Penny Zuhl is calling the event for Sky Sports. She's going to join us in a couple of minutes to break down the biggest storylines at Royal Porthcawl in Wales.
Welcome in, Penny Zuhl, who's on site for Sky Sports. Wonderful to spend some time with you. What's the top story in your mind? Is it Lottie? Is it Nelly? Is it Lydia? Is it the weather?
Oh, well, thank you. I think a highlight for me today is joining Damon and Eamon. But in terms of here at the golf course, it's a toss-up between this stunning venue with its iconic sweeping scenic views. And in terms of history and iconic, this is the first time that a Women's Open has been here in Wales. It's hosted, it's got major pedigree, it's hosted senior opens before. It's a bit of a hidden gem of a golf course with wind sweeping across each and every hole that's switching different directions. It's going to be a huge challenge to these players. A lot of people are looking forward to seeing the world's best take on Royal Porthcawl. And then in terms of the world's best, we are all super excited about Lottie Wode having won in her professional debut at the Scottish Open last week. I think there's a lot of people who are just going to swarm to the Lottie Wode group to see her on the range, to see her hit balls live in action, because she won a professional event as an amateur. She came third at Evian. And she had won the Smith Salvert last time round, but the Open was at St Andrews. So we're expecting big things from her. She is actually the bookies' favourite in Scottie Scheffler odds to win the Open, to win the AIG Women's Open this week. So I think we're witnessing a generational talent here in the making. And yeah, first major as a professional, she could definitely win it. Those are sort of the two top storylines that everyone's a buzz about this week.
It really is amazing, Henny, that she is the bookies' favourite, because they're not sentimental folks in the bookmakers' world in general. But here she is, first major as a pro, and that is her status. You mentioned the pedigree of Royal Porthcawl. The Senior Open was there a couple of years ago. Alex Chayka won. 5 over par was the winning score. Are you expecting a pretty stern test this week?
No, I am, yes. I'm not expecting similar scoring, and that's because of the weather. So if you go and search anywhere, the Senior Open 2 years ago, Alex Chayka, you will see sideways rain, torrential sideways rain. I mean, it really was absolutely brutal. Here this week, yes, we have the blustery conditions that you mentioned, Damon, but we have beautiful, clear skies. There might be a little bit of rain here and there throughout the course of the week, but it's meant to be pretty good conditions. For my sins, I played in the Pro-Am yesterday. Let's not talk about my golf. But I did get a first-hand view at this golf course. And in many places, it is fairly soft. You can attack it. But you do. It's very much an approach with caution, because for the first few holes, it's an incredibly tough start. There are places that you have to start it out over the out-of-bounds line across the beach in order to combat the wind. So I think we're looking at a player that's going to play well here is someone who is incredibly accurate, that they've got their ball striking on point this week. We're looking at that paired with short game. The greens are fairly friendly. They're quite tame. We're not going to see massive sweeping undulations. They're sort of in sections. So if someone's great with their ball striking, great with short game, I think you could get by on sort of 7 out of 10 putting and still be up there. That's the properties of this golf course, I would say.
You know, Henny, 1 year ago, the golf world, and really in some sections, the sports world, was abuzz about Nelly Korda, world number one, Met Gala, being compared to Caitlin Clark of the WNBA. She hasn't won this season. She is playing well. What's the buzz like about Nelly, if at all, this week?
Yeah, it's quite astounding, isn't it? 12 months ago, going into the Women's Open at St Andrews, she'd already won 6 times on the LPGA Tour. Again, we're talking about Scottie Scheffler. Those were Scottie Scheffler-like numbers. The two world number ones were going neck and neck of who could have a better win strike out there on their respective tours. Fast forward to now, like you said, Damon, she hasn't won so far this season. However, her scoring average is actually better than it was last season. So in terms of her game and how that's progressing, it's right there for her. You can't argue with an improved scoring average. I think just the depth of field is getting stronger and stronger year in, year out on the LPGA Tour, as proven by who we were discussing, Lottie Wode. These players are coming out, they're ready to win immediately. And so I think for Nelly, it's definitely a case of field's getting stronger. It's more difficult to win. She's in fact playing better. And it's just a case of when and not if for the world number one.
What do you think is a more likely outcome this week at Porthcawl, Henny, that you have Lottie Wode win in her first major as a professional, or you have Lydia Ko retain the title? Because we haven't had back-to-back winners since Yanni Tseng 14 years ago.
No, OK, I'm just going to not sit on the fence and say that probably Lottie Wode victory is more likely. No, that's not really sticking my neck out, because as we've ascertained, she is the bookie's favourite. But I think what made Lydia Ko's win 12 months ago so special is the fact that it was her first major victory in 8 years. I don't want to say she's coming to the end of her career, but given what I was saying about how tough it is to win out on the LPGA Tour, as proven by Nelly Korda, the reason it was such a special victory is she had her husband there. first major win in 8 years. She'd just come off of Olympic gold glory. I think it was this kind of, I just wanted to win one more major. And we saw the outpouring of emotion from her because of that, because of the scenario and where she's at in her career and in her life. So do I expect back-to-back Lydia Ko wins? Probably not. I think it would, look, it would be incredibly special, but there are so many names that we're looking forward to seeing and who have had a great season. Angel Yin, for example, has had top 10s in every single major so far this season. Gino Titica, the world number two, still yet to win a major. There are so many names that I could just keep going on and on and on, but I know we're limited on time, that could win the AIG Women's Open this week.
And there's a purse increase of $250,000 this year. Henny, do you sense that the women's game is on an upswing from your perspective?
Yeah, hugely. I mean, we're playing for $9.75 million this week. If you go back to 1995, you're looking at $600,000. That's the difference that's been made. That's the jump. And okay, that's in the prize fund. But when we look at the infrastructure around the event, the fans that come here, the fan village at the AIG Women's Open, it's packed with young girls. It's a wonderful environment and atmosphere in terms of the tournament build out. That has also grown year in, year out. So I think what we're seeing is this wonderful arena now for women's sport, and women's golf is going along with that as well. And that's proven not just in prize fund and infrastructure, but in the field, in the players and their scoring averages, in some of the storylines that we're discussing. Everything is going hand in hand to improve the AIG Women's Open and women's golf year on year.
Henny, great to see you. Usually when we chat, we talk about the wonders of safari. We'll have to save that for a later conversation. Enjoy your time in Wales, and thanks so much for the time.
Thank you both so much. It's been a pleasure joining you on the show.
Hamilton joins us now. Hamilton, congratulations on the victory. There's some pretty impressive names on that trophy. Tiger Woods, Jordan Spieth a couple of times, Scottie Scheffler. What does it feel like to sit there and look at your name alongside theirs?
It's pretty, it's hard to believe right now. I'm still a little bit in shock, but yeah, just to, you know, be on the same level as those players is a pretty cool honor.
Well, you entered the week 625th in the Wagger. Nobody saw you coming. What are you most proud of in this accomplishment?
I guess, first of all, the matches that I had, I played against some really good players like Tyler Watts and Luke Colton, kind of the top level of junior golf. And being able to compete against them and come out on top was really cool. And then also just the mental and physical battle that it was, especially in the Dallas heat. And there's not a whole lot of trees at Trinity Four. So just being able to keep myself in it mentally and physically, and then have my game show the way it did, I'm very proud of that.
How much does the drive, chip and putt prepare you for competition, Hamilton? Because that's a pretty big stage for young kids to be on, with a lot of scrutiny, a lot of attention that weekend before the Masters. Does that make you feel more comfortable in high pressure situations when you find yourself in competition later in life?
Yeah, for sure. It definitely helps me get ready for, you know, having cameras around and being, you know, having pictures taken of me and having interviews. And it was definitely a great experience to, you know, have that at a very young age at 13 for me. So to be able to be in that spotlight at a young age, I think has definitely helped me show up in bigger tournaments like this.
Well, it seems like golf is in your blood. You're from Augusta, Georgia. You've competed in the drive, chip and putt. How'd you discover the game of golf to begin with?
Yeah, it was all my dad. He's basically had me swinging a golf club since I was like two. I mean, he had me swinging plastic clubs before I could walk. And then I've been playing since I can remember. So he's definitely been the biggest influence. And then just growing up, you know, being around great people, great mentors, you know, they've all kind of inspired me to be the player that I am now.
What's your focus now? Does the attention turn, Hamilton, to the U.S. Amateur, the Olympic Club?
It does, yeah. I started back practicing this morning. I've taken a little bit of time to kind of enjoy it and recover. But yeah, I leave for the Olympic Club, I think next Friday. So I've got about a week and a half to prepare for that. And yeah, so that's my main focus right now.
Well, you're also a commit to the University of Georgia. Bubba, Kevin Kisner, Chris Kirk, Harris English, Brian Harmon, Davis Thompson. Why do you want to be a Bulldog and play for Chris Hack?
Well, that's a big reason right there, is just all the great names that have come through their program. They obviously have great experience in developing incredible players. And I've grown up a Georgia fan. It's always been Georgia for me. It's 2 hours from home. My mom went there, my dad grew up a Georgia fan. I mean, it was just kind of meant to be, but that is definitely probably the biggest reason that I'm going there, is just because of the incredible coaching and the experience that they have in developing great players.
Thomas, and I read that you're a big fan of Tobacco Road Golf Club, which is one of the most polarizing courses in the country. People either love it or hate it. I'm totally on the side of loving that golf course, because you just see things out there that you don't see on any other golf course in America. Why do you like it so much?
I love unique golf courses, and I mean, Tobacco Road's about as unique as you can get. It's been a while since I've been out there, but I played a junior event there, and there's no other course like it. So seeing the creativity and the design there was very cool to me.
Hamilton, it's the summertime. There are folks all over the country and world preparing for member guests, maybe match play in their own club. You're obviously a match play master. How do you prepare for match play versus stroke play? What are some keys that maybe some folks that are watching today can learn from you?
Yeah, I would say the biggest learning curve for me was getting used to there being pressure every hole. So in a stroke play event, let's say it's a 72-hole event like they have on tour, there's really no pressure until the last 9 holes. And you're just trying to get yourself in position to take advantage when you can for that back 9. But in match play, there's constant pressure and strategy, and you really are trying to, all you have to do is just beat your opponent. So, I mean, the biggest thing is obviously putting. If you can have a hot putter during match play, it's pretty hard to beat. And then, and then scoring clubs is big. You can't give away any, easy opportunities, anything inside of 150 yards. You need to be able to take advantage of in match play. So I'd say those two things, just getting used to those pressure, maybe 4 to 15 foot putts that you might have to tie or win the hole. And then, just scoring clubs, getting your numbers dialed in from 50 to 150 yards, where you can really stick one to either, maybe win a match or win a hole to kind of turn the momentum.
I know next June is a very long way away, Hamilton, but you do have a tee time at Shinnecock Hills in the U.S. Open. Do you have a fantasy practice round partner that you'd like to play around with?
I'd love to play with some of the dogs. My friend Mason Howell, who's also a future Bulldog, he played this year at Oakmont, and he was able to play with Russell Henley, Harris English. So I'd love to play with some of them and get to meet some of those guys.
Well, definitely a long list of names to choose from, that's for sure. Hamilton, congratulations on all you've accomplished already at this point in your career. Best of luck going forward at Olympic Club and Shinnecock and beyond.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
We're continuing with the theme of young winners with a drive, chip and putt pedigree. We have another coming right up, Mia Hammond. She just won on the Epson Tour at the weekend as an amateur. Stay with us. We're back on Golf Today, and let's flashback. 2022 Drive, Chip and Putt National Finals, when Mia Hammond competed in the girls' 14 to 15 division. On the 18th green at Augusta National Golf Club, she made a dramatic final putt that made her a national champion. Well, this past weekend on the Epson Tour, she made another putt to secure a spot in the history books. 17 years old, and she won the Greater Toledo Classic as an amateur, became only the eighth amateur in the history of the Epson Tour to win. She outlasted a field of more than 100 professionals to come out on top by a single shot.
Man, Eamon, some kids just have it. They do. Mia's a part of the U.S. National Junior Team. It's part of the U.S. National Development Program, providing opportunities, support, and training for young golfers around the country. They are wonderful players, and so neat to have Mia with us on this Wednesday. First of all, congratulations. You called it a dream week, playing in Toledo. You're from Ohio. You had family and friends there. How'd you maintain your composure to pull off this historic win?
Definitely wasn't easy. I was very emotional, especially in that final round, pretty nervous starting off and coming down the stretch. I think having my friends and family there really helped a lot. You know, every time I look over at my mom, she smiles and gives me a thumbs up. So that was something that helped me a lot throughout the final day.
Mia, there were a couple of rounds during the tournament where you beat the weather horn literally by seconds a couple of times. Did you start to feel as though maybe it was your week?
Yeah, that was a big part of it. I was lucky, especially the second round. I didn't have to come back the next morning and finish at all. I was able to sleep in, and I think I teed off at like 3:30 the final day, which was super helpful. I definitely had an advantage there.
Did you go into the tournament thinking that you could actually win, or were your expectations a little more modest?
They were a lot more modest. My goal going into the week was honestly to just make the cut and just get some experience. It was cool to have a dual event with the Legends players as well, and being able to hear their stories and experiences was just super cool. And honestly, yeah, the experience is a big part of it for me. And if I happened to get top 10, that was going to be amazing. That was an even bigger goal for myself, but my expectations were a little lower than that.
There's some wonderful highs for athletes, as you know, but they're also, with that, there's dark times, there's suffering, there's doubt, there's fear. And I was struck by what you wrote on Instagram in the aftermath of your victory, saying that in the past year, it tore you down in ways you didn't even know were possible. Your love of the game was almost gone. What was happening during those tough times?
There were a few tournaments over the past year where I would have a really, really good first round and, excuse me, I would be leading the tournament and everything would just kind of not go my way after that. I struggled with my confidence. I struggled a lot mentally. You know, there were times I really did want to stop playing. And, you know, I had to look past that and look to what my future was going to have. I had verbally committed to Duke, and having that backup plan was something to look forward to as well. You know, I know there were so many people that had never given up on me in those tough times. So I knew that, you know, I owed it to them to not give up on what my future had in store. And sitting here after this past week, I'm so grateful that I didn't give up and I continue to push forward.
Who were some people that you leaned on?
My parents a lot, my friends that were surrounding me. We had a lot of conversations about, you know, after tournaments, just reflections and how to change mindset. I had a couple of conversations with my college coaches as well that helped a lot. They gave me some really, really good advice, especially recently. I played a tournament a couple of weeks ago where I lost in a playoff, and that hurt. That really stung. I played decent for the most part, and just to, you know, not be able to pull it off was hard to get through. And, you know, I talked a lot to a sports psychologist that helped a lot over the past year and what to do in those situations, and just the advice and, you know, the support systems I had, I think really, really helped a lot the past week.
Does this victory change anything in terms of your plans or your goals? Mia, how does your competitive future look for the next few years in your mind?
Yeah, so to me, it doesn't really change a lot. I'm still planning to go to college. After college, I would love to try to play on tour for a couple of years. I really want to have a good education as my backup plan. I have no intent on going pro in, you know, the next 5 years. I want to take it slow. I want to be able to make sure that I'm ready for that kind of, I guess, lifestyle. I want to make sure that I'm going to be stable no matter what I do.
I'm buddies with Amanda Blumenhurst. She's Duke royalty. You got the McGuire sisters. You got Celine Boutier. Dan Brooks has been there forever. Why Duke as you're rocking that shirt on this Wednesday?
The education was a huge thing for me, as well as their professional success. Everyone there has also been there for years. Like Coach Brooks, I think it's his 42nd year coaching, which is insane. Knowing that he has that much experience, he's able to pass down his knowledge to me is something that I'm really looking forward to and someone that I've really looked up to for a very long time.
No doubt the future is bright and very cool to win a tournament with Stacey Lewis's name on it. Congratulations, Mia. It's great to meet you.
Thank you guys so much. It was nice to meet you.